person driving that semi a day
knows what you're doing.
Yeah, and they know the neighborhood and everything.
I didn't make any progress. I didn't make any progress.
We will call the Gage County Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, November 1st, 2023, to order at 8:47. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation: Jurgens, Haxby, Schuler, Tiemann, Dorn, Swavely, and Lytle. We'd also like to welcome the public that's here today. Up first is the consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held October 18th, 2023. Approve all claims through November 1st, 2023, in the amount of $565,946.20, except claim number 231-10075 to RL Tiemann Construction, Inc., in the amount of $33,499.58, to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve utility permit number 1294 to Great Plains Communications. Great Plains Communications will be installing new fiber cable for a new communication tower. Great Plains will bore under intersections, culverts, and driveways along planned route located south of Section 7, 8, and 9 in Midland Township, Township 4 North, Range 6 East, and south of Sections 9, 10, 11, and 12, east of Section 5 and 8, north of Sections 5 and 6, Township 4 North, Range 5 East, Blakely Township. Approve 2022-2023 fiscal year 22-23 NBCS reports. That is our consent agenda. I'd ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, unless there's any items you'd like to pull off.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn. Any discussion or items on the consent agenda to pull off? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 231-10075 to RL Tiemann, Inc., in the amount of $33,499.58. This would bring the total amount of claims paid through November 1st, 2023, to $599,445.78. This is the company I work for.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Swavely. Any discussion on this item? If not, please vote. 6 in favor with Tiemann abstaining. Motion carries. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Anyone may comment on any matter that is not on the agenda. However, no board action can be taken until the following board meeting or later, unless the board declares it an emergency. If not, we will move on to committee reports. Building and ground, winter lights. Mr. Swavely.
David's standing in the door, ready to come in.
Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Well, we talked about Applied Connective, gave us a proposal for updating our security system, camera system, and so I did ask them to come down to a committee report on Monday morning, and November 27th will work. So we will have a discussion at that time, and they will also go down to the highway department and look at the camera situation down there also. We met with the Holiday Lights Committee last Wednesday. The lighting ceremony this year will be on November 19th at 5:25, and the building looks pretty good. There are a few areas where the lights did fall down a little bit, so Sean Van Lanningham will be here hopefully next Monday and start putting the lights on the trees and doing anything needed to the building. And we did discuss at that time possibly putting 5 more street lights that match our existing ones on the north side and west side also, that possibly could be funded by the Holiday Lights Committee also. And we did turn on the lights last Saturday for a tribute to J.T. Thornburg. His funeral was last Saturday. And Masonry Construction is probably kind of at a standstill. They were working on the north side off of scaffolding, and they still need to do the rest of the tower, but it looks like that's probably going to hold off until next spring now. They will need to bring in a big lift, and with the days getting so short now, I think they're just going to hold off on that and switch gears and start putting the limestone on that infilled area on the north side by the generator. And flags, the Avenue of Flags will go up on Thursday, November the 9th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they will come down Sunday the 12th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for Veterans Day. And that's about what I have.
Approximately, we've been asked several times, approximately how much more is required to finish the tuck pointing and the stone repair on the building?
The tower was a pretty big project in itself, so they're going to be on that probably another several months next spring. And then we do have the east side to do washing and stone repair. That's kind of where they started on the southeast corner, and so that east side does need some, well, the repointing and washing of the stone and any repair work also. Other than that, he has pretty much gone around the building, but there are some discolored areas of the repair, so they're going to address those also.
Next year, maybe?
I would think so. I know he's excited to kind of, you know, keep continuing with this. They do have a other schedule, but they have been putting in quite a bit of time on this one, so that would be nice to get it wrapped up. So,
thanks, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Eric, with that, he's talked about lighting up the lights for JT. Dave had a good history about how that whole thing began with JT. I didn't know if you want.
Well, you know, I think it's, there's also some discussion of maybe for Christmas lighting in the future to put a, come on back in, Dave, to put a star up. Something to commemorate JT. But JT, when I was on the board a long time ago, JT came in and sold the board on lighting the Christmas or the courthouse up. He paid for the lights, installed them, did everything else. I think Dick Creek helped him a little bit. That was who he was, the custodian at the time that lived downstairs. But JT was very instrumental in making this courthouse what it is when it comes to Christmas time. And he had his old El Camino sitting out there with a whole bunch of wire in the back and the ladders, and he put all the lights up, and they slowly got bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. So I think it's really good that we honor him for what he's done for not only this but everything else he's done in the community. So,
as Dave said, we did talk about doing something a little extra special just to always remember JT and to keep this project going. It's 35th year this year, so it's pretty much parents, their kids, the grandkids, everybody knows what the holiday lights are all about, so it's a great tradition in Gage County.
If I remember right, you said it came out of his pocket.
He paid for it. It didn't cost the county anything at all, and then this winter lights thing developed, and it kept going. Okay, so.
And it's continued like that. Steph Perkins and Nora Zimmerman, they co-chair this.
Rogers
on this board.
Bill Cook.
I know we lost a couple members here over the last few years. Mr. Jones, he's always on that committee going over that. But here we have something that's outside the courthouse. Money's privately fundraised. They make additional donations to the county, whether it's removing and replacing trees outside, the additional street lights, decorative street lights. The Winter Lights Committee pays for that through privately donated dollars. So those are all outside benefits that people driving by or through our county can enjoy. So all of you that do put work in that, thank you. Thank you, Dave, for the time you put in on that all the time as well.
We're going to miss JT. He's a guy you could never say no to. He kept things going all the time, but he will be missed.
Very persistent.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Equalization, Patty wasn't here this morning. Annette joined us. but we will continue to see valuation increases, farm grounds going up, commercial and residential property will continue to go up. She's on notice from the state that although we are in compliance on everything that she put out for last year's valuations, with current sales and continued sales, valuations will continue to increase.
You know, it was a lot quicker when Denny just said it was everything's equal, Eric.
I know. We lost Denny, too. Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket items. City of Wymore, quarterly EMS services, $10,000. Washington County Sheriff, housing of inmates, $13,500. Beatrice Concrete, Sand and Gravel, Rock and Gravel, $18,645.33. Manili Wagner and Associates Engineering Consulting, $30,953.46. RL Team and Construction, Township Gravel and Hauling, $33,499.58. Engage, Area Growth, County Sheriff Expenses, $40,133.20.
Human resources, everyone is semi-content. Law enforcement, emergency management, Mr. Lytle.
Lisa, you got anything you want?
I do not have anything.
Gus, you want to kind of talk a little bit?
Morning. I had out to you earlier just a few noteworthy things for you from October 15th through 28th. For sake of time, won't go through all that because you've got to full agenda today, but a little data on the school resource deputy. I had that posted till yesterday, end of the month. I had two submit a letter of interest, so we'll start interviewing those folks first thing next week, and then hopefully have somebody on board before too much longer after that. We'll get some training scheduled for them in Topeka, Kansas, is where the training is for them to get them started. And then kind of hit the road running here after Christmas is our hope. So,
two internal candidates or
two internal, yeah, and they both met the criteria to apply. So,
which schools?
We'll see where we go on it. So,
Which schools are they gonna?
There's a basic training you kind of go to for school resource officers, and the solar country. The close one happened to be for us is in Topeka, which is not far. That's good. So, it gets a foot. And then they'll have an annual training every year to kind of keep
it
going.
Which area schools?
Oh, it'll be
Southern,
Freeman, Southern, Odell.
It's the three schools in Gage
in the
County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beatrice is already covered
right.
with
I understand. Yeah. Okay.
Will Tri-County be touched by this? I know you had discussion with them in the past.
Not really, because it's on the other side of the line. We have a lot of our kids there, and obviously if we'll work together with them, because they have I think two SROs in that county. So we'll work it out and do what we got to do. If we get together and got to sponsor something, we will. You know, so we'll just the first year is getting our feet wet and seeing what's going to work and not work. Because I know the schools are really watching how this is going to go. So
it'll be like on a rotating basis. Every they'll
how they're going to need it depends. Chief Martinez from Wymore, he was school resource officer for a while. He usually spent more time at school that had more kids. But it's just where they need him that day. And that was one of the issues that the superintendent said, well, how are we going to get our fair share? I said, well, right now it's a moot point because we're picking it up right now, the tab. The hope is we'll be doing this for the last half of the school year next year anyway, and they can see some value to it, and they'll kick in on it. So we'll play with it, see where it works out best, and kind of go from there. We're already kind of helping out did a fire drill here in Freeman earlier. So it gives us an idea to where we're going to be at on stuff. So,
one of the things that Chief Martinez talked about was he'd take his calendar and try to cover like home athletic events and stuff like that. And
so. It's a good program. We hope that it works out well.
Lots of good things come out of the Beatrice one. So,
yeah, just like I told Gary before we start talking about this, it takes the right person. You have to like kids and people, and to deal with them. So.
Can't say they need a slap on the head. You got to do it a different way, right?
That's the old days. Sometimes I think that's right, Dave, but unfortunately we can't anymore. So, all right, any more questions? You're good?
I'm cool.
You look dressed up. That's good today. I like that.
All right. You got an update on them horses?
Hearing today, I think at 3. I think it's a discovery one or nothing?
No. Basically, just and we'll have a release later, but we're in the discovery stage of litigation right now. Basically, we're looking at various reports that are coming in. We're having experts analyze those. Contrary to the rumor mill that's making its way across Facebook, we have made no decisions on that. And I hope people can calm down. The horses are safe. Gus takes them out once a week and rides them, and everything's fine. I'll just leave it at that because it is an ongoing criminal investigation. But I just want to dispel there's a horrible bunch of rumors going around. We got a lot of good people working on it, including the deputies that are still in the investigating stuff. So appreciate the question.
I got a phone call last night. How can that happen? Don't believe everything you read on there.
Yeah, exactly right.
Who would imagine it wouldn't be real on the internet?
No. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Bad or otherwise.
Road and Bridge, Mr. Juergens. Yes,
thanks for your time you spent on the SRL, too.
Yes. Hand off to Ms. Haxby.
The dirt crew's been blading, roads hauling, shop work, cutting. They did a lot of cutting trees and spraying. The asphalt crew's been working on the bridge maintenance stuff, cold patching, cutting trees as well. I've been working on the RAISE grant. That one ended up coming up before the BIP, so working on reapplying that with the advice from the last one. And then we're looking at applying for an additional box culvert with the bridge match program to see if we can get one more in there. And then the bus bridge and the Blue Springs bridge, possibly the Odell South bridge, would go in the BIP grant, which is basically just a bridge grant. Again, the bridge match is 55%, I think up to 250. And then we're still working on doing traffic counts. And then we discussed CDL for practice driving because of the new laws to get your CDLs and what we can do to make sure that we're getting CDL drivers. And we're going to be opening bids for culverts here shortly.
Thank you very much. We have a timed event at 9:15. So we'll skip over that for now and ask Ms. Hurley to come up. Instead of waiting until the end of our meeting, you might sneak in before everything.
Great.
Good morning, Dakota.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, quarterly tourism report. So I started off the report here with all the advertisements that we've placed since the last time I've been here. I did point out on the social media blitz that we do with Nebraska Tourism, we had a total reach of over 140,000 people. We just did another one of them highlighting our holiday parade, but I don't have results back for that one yet. And then other things that we did is the North American Welsh Festival was hosted in Lincoln, but they came down to Wymore to the Welsh Museum, and they also visited the homestead. So we put information in their brochure. The Golden Ride bike event, which starts in Lincoln, ends in Beatrice. They stay overnight here, either at Chautauqua Park or in our hotels. We did Nebraska Life Magazine, Applejack Festival over in Nebraska City, and then the Nebraska State Visitor Guide, of course, in there. We just got done wrapping up the 12th annual Trail of Treasures. Beatrice is the largest town on that route, so that is border to border along Highway 136. Garage sales. Some businesses jump on board. We had, I think, 6 businesses that were listed as vendors for that event. A total of 28 for Beatrice this year, which is the highest amount in one town, of course, across that whole route. We had out-of-state visitors coming in. I was out during that weekend just to kind of stop in and chat, and we had Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri for sure that I know that came in specifically for that Trail of Treasures to go border to border there.
Right now we're in the stages of planning the holiday lighted parade. It's a pretty big event for us and takes a lot of sponsorships. So we actually asked for sponsorships this year for that event to help pay for some of that advertising. This will be the first year that we did actual sponsorships. Other businesses have helped provide things before, but this year we're requesting sponsorships. I'm currently partaking in Leadership Beatrice Class 18. We recently partnered with Engage to complete a hotel feasibility study. That study has been completed, and now we're moving on to the next stage of that. I'm active with CENTEC meetings, which is Southeast Nebraska Tourism Commission. I attended many ribbon cuttings with the Chamber just to network and get to know more people. I just recently returned from Nebraska Tourism Conference in Gearing a couple weeks ago. That was really great. The kind of main idea was storytelling and marketing and using what your small town has to tell the story, because we don't, of course, have what Lincoln or Omaha has, but we do have our own niche areas. I recently presented to a UNL women's tour group that came. They visited the Homestead Beatrice Bakery, Black Crow, and Cedar Creek Pottery. I was able to meet with them at the Homestead with welcome bags, and then I also had lunch with them at Black Crow to give them kind of just a rundown of Gage County and other areas they could stop. I'm currently recruiting stops for the Nebraska Passport Program for next year, so those are due by November 30th. It is free for anybody to join that. There are certain demographics that they have to meet. They have to be open certain hours during that time. It is through the summer, and it's free for them to join. The feedback so far is that they get an extra 2,000 to 5,000 visitors just for being a stop on that pass. Last year we had Travels Popcorn. Tall Tree Tastings has been a part of that. Clean Slate Soap has been a part of that. So there's kind of a different avenue that most of our businesses, as long as they're open, could partake in that. And I also am the lead chamber representative for the new relaunched Young Professionals of Gage County group. And then I attached some financials there. You'll see there's a 24% increase. The tourism fiscal year is July to June. So, and the year, of course, we had just kicked over into a new year for that recently. 24% increase from the 22 to 23 year, up from the 21 to 22 year. There, you'll see the July of 23 check was a rather large income. That is actually making up, if you go back and look at May, there was Department of Revenue error that was made in May that caused that check to be really small. So that's kind of making up for that. So I would really like to say that we had a super great July, and I'm sure we did, but it wasn't quite as good as it looks right there. It's kind of making up for that small little bit that happened in May. Any questions?
Dakota, as far as, I think there's a pretty good chunk of money still available.
Correct.
As far as applicants, have you had many lately?
We currently have one intent to apply. Mm-hmm. So we are hoping to get that rolling. We have three projects that we know they intend to apply. They just are not in that stage yet to actually fill that out. And then it's also in the works after. We are currently working. We're going to be doing a whole rebranding for Gage County Tourism itself. And so after we meet the next couple months, we're hoping to really push that Visitor Improvement Fund grant opportunity. We're also looking at, we ran into the difference in, we have promotional fund that we are able to offer for marketing, and we ran into kind of some ways on how our grant, as it's written itself, is hard for those that are applying for marketing funds to fill that out. So we're working on editing that. We're working with Jeff Mall at Visit Lincoln because they have two different grant forms, one for marketing and one for actual capital. So we're looking at possibly doing that, two different forms for them to fill out so that we can have more communities fill out that marketing option as well.
Okay, good. This is just a good opportunity to remind everybody that
correct.
That's
yes.
available.
Yep. Yes.
Dakota, at the last tourism meeting I was at, there was discussion of an Airbnb workshop. Is there any more discussion on that?
Yes, I'm working with Airbnb and Vrbo. So far, there's just been issues with having them both have a representative available on the same date. So I'm working with there was a presentation at the agritourism conference, and so I'm working with the representative that came for Vrbo for that, and then I just reached out to Airbnb, and they gave me a representative kind of for our area. So we're looking at hosting a, not really a class, but kind of like an informal session on what that looks like if you would like to list something on Airbnb or Vrbo, having those people that represent those companies come and kind of share what that looks like, what you need from your city or county, how to collect those lodging dollars. They did not previously, Airbnbs did not previously collect lodging tax, so we did not market them in any way. They do now have to collect that lodging tax, so we are able to help market those. We do have a few in town. We have a few outside of town. We would just like to provide the opportunity for people who maybe want to do that if they have an extra home. John knows somebody that has a home that he thinks would be a great idea, is kind of what stemmed the conversation, and just kind of what that looks like and how people can get on board with that.
So if an individual is interested, they can still come into your office and for
yes,
some information.
I do have information. I do have information. I just can't pinpoint a date yet to get the both representatives on the same date. I think it would be silly if I don't have representatives from multiple aspects,
right,
because
right.
they kind of do offer different things through each avenue.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Any other questions for Dakota? Thank you very much.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too.
Move to place the Gage County Tourism Quarterly Report on file.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Swavely. Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. We have a timed event in 1 minute. So I guess I'd ask if anyone has a bid for the culvert project, please bring it up at this time. Do you have the ones that we have so far, or do you want to check across the hall to see if any others came
sure
in?
Sure, to let me know.
All right.
In the mail. So.
We'll wait a few seconds here to be official, and then we'll close bidding.
I assume that Terry.
Tease.
Not official yet, Emily.
Yeah, hold on just a second. Yeah.
I'm just counting.
It's nice to have some bids.
I see 3. Is that right?
I would ask for a motion to close the Gage County 23 culvert project bids.
So move.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Swavely. Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Sorry. At 9:15.
First one is triple 72x40.
Who's it from?
That's a good question.
Contact Engineering
okay.
Solutions.
Contact Aaron, yeah,
okay.
Out of Westchester, Ohio. Project number C-34-1072, a total $40,810. Project C-34-1143 for a total of $29,620. Project C-34-1232 Total for the project, $133,266. Has the bond with it. Let me go back.
There should be three projects that
are right. I was going to give the first one, the C341072, was triple 72-inch by 40-inch corrugated metal pipes with a zero-degree skew. The second one is a C341143 project, twin 72-inch with 40-foot corrugated metal pipes. The third one is C341232, twin 108 by 47-foot metal pipes. This one is from Metal Culverts Incorporated. Total for C341072, $42,186. Total for C341143, Total for C341232, $130,391.70.
Did you read that one?
Yeah, what was that for, though? I already did the other two.
There's three projects. There's
right.
This one.
One, two, three.
And then the total.
There's that much difference? Total for projects, excuse me, let me back up again, I'm sorry. Total for project C341232, $58,021.70.
And then the total for all three is that.
What was that total?
Total for all three. Did I have a total on the last one?
Yeah.
He didn't read the third project for the first.
Oh, he just gave a total for the first one.
Did I have a total for that one?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
This is the total.
So just to clarify,
on the total first on the first bid was
$133,266.
That was total of all three projects.
Total of all three.
Okay.
Oh, so what was project 1232 on the first
one? So the first one, the first projects for C341072 was $40,810.
Right.
For 1143 project was $29,620.
Yep.
For the 1232 project was $62,836, totaling $133,266.
And if I got the other three numbers correct, total for all three projects on from Metal Culverts Incorporated is $130,391.70.
So it was on 1232 for that one was $58,000.
Yep, $58,000. $21.70.
Okay.
This one.
Keep track of this instead of Mark.
Ace Irrigation. Project C341072. Total of $39,908. Project C341143, total of $29,572. Project C341232, $52,336.60. Total for all three projects, $121,816.60. As we've done in the past, I would like to submit these bids to the Highway Department. Becky's here, and review them and give us a recommendation at some point. There are dates in there, delivery dates. I don't know if that makes any difference to them, but they can go through that kind of stuff and give us a recommendation.
We get that recommendation today, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Jurgens.
Mark's here to help too with that also.
Yeah. Oh. He won't have much to say about it. Becky, run it.
Is Ms. Stoner here?
She's right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see Nicole.
Hi,
welcome, Nicole Stoner, up Gage County Extension Educator, to present the extension update.
Perfect. Well,
and Nicole, we will this year, this calendar year, this fiscal year, at some point in time, it is our goal to meet with Dave. Still Dave. He's there yet.
Yeah.
And several of us and yourself and Dave will sit down. Thank you. We do want to get a new agreement put together. We don't have one. Ideally, we will have a very simple contract between Extension and Gage County and continue that partnership with the university, but something very easy for all of us to use and very straightforward, and we'll get away from our current situation.
Okay.
But we do appreciate you the work you put in the county and the area.
We talked about the university.
The interlocal agreement.
Our
contract is the opposite of simple right now, we'll just say. But we're going to try to simplify that and make it a little more user-friendly.
All right. Well, we'll have to get that on yours and Dave's schedule, I think, is the dilemma. Well, thank you guys for having me. I did want to first say thank you. The new entrance in our building is so much nicer, and we've had people come in and comment on how it's much easier to get into our building. And Dave and Adam have been working, and it's looking great, and we appreciate that you approved the new cabinets, because when we moved the old one, as it turns out, the front of the old one was two-tone. They didn't match. So I'm really glad that we're getting all the improvements made. It's going to be a lot better, and it is now going to be all handicap accessible and everything. So that was one of my big projects. So I'm glad we're getting that done. So just on some updates, you'll see on the front, I went to a national conference in August, and I presented a poster session, and I also presented an actual presentation, and I won a few awards. So Gage County was debuted there at that national level. My poster session was on yard and garden and all the things that I do with that. So that I just wanted to highlight for you there. I've been working with Master Gardeners. I had some new Master Gardeners. We did the new training this fall, and that's all Zoom and everything. And so that worked really good for just a small group, but I wanted to trial it with a small group, so it was good. And then I'm still working with our statewide online programming with the Grow Big Red stuff. So those are those online programs to anyone in the general public, and we'll have some more coming up next year. for youth development, JC's been working hard as usual, and so you can see they did some BLAST Learning League programming with the Beatrice Public Schools and Southeast Community College and Beatrice Education Foundation. So they wrote an expanded learning opportunities grant to fund SEC students' training, curriculum, and program supplies for that BLAST Learning League. So that's been really great. Over 130 youth, grades K through 5, have been served through that. From the fair, Gage County Fair, we had 2,399 4-H exhibits, that's static and livestock, a 2% increase from last year, so that's good. State Fair, we had 157 static exhibits, 15 livestock exhibits, and 8 in-person contest participants from Gage County. So that was really great to showcase Gage County youth at the State Fair. And then Beatrice Youth Leadership toured the Beatrice Food Pantry for part of their program. This was the third meeting of 8, and youth attend that while they engage in community service, learn leadership and entrepreneurial skills, explore the community, and complete a project. So that's made possible through a partnership with Beatrice Chamber of Commerce and Gage County Extension Youth Development and Beatrice Public Schools. So we had, in the Beatrice Youth Leadership, it was 12 youth ranging from 8th to 10th grade. And then you can see here on this third page is Nathan Mueller. That's his lovely face there. Three high-impact regional agronomy programs held in Gage County in 23. There was a crop production. I can't talk today. Crop production clinic that had 100 attendees, Nebraska on-farm research meeting for 30 attendees, and the Nebraska soybean management field day with 75 attendees. He held a program in Northwest Gage County for 40 visiting agricultural researchers from France. So we're getting into an international audience with agronomy, so that's great. And he highlighted farmers, including ag technology used by John Niemeyer and on-farm research by Monty Merkel. So on that page, you'll also see the other regional experts that cover our area. Anastasia is our new ag profitability extension instructor. Ben Jewell for Rural Prosperity Nebraska. Ingrid does the early child and early childhood. And then Wade is our beef systems educator. You can see there, Nathan gave me a whole bunch of upcoming dates of like pesticide things and other agronomy upcoming events there in the corner. And then on the back, I just wanted to highlight a couple of programs we do have coming up. The December 13th, So You've Inherited a Farm, Now What? Program. Jim Jansen, I think, will be coming down and working with that one. So that's December 13th. And then Ingrid's got a program on November 11th to help manage challenging behaviors in the classroom. So we've got some things coming up, and we've been working on a lot of things as well.
Great.
Any questions on that part? I do have one other.
You talked about the fair. I just wanted to say that the fair, it went really well between the fair board and your office. I think 4-H is definitely a need for kids. And so I like to see that when it's really successful and, like you said, had an increase in
exhibits. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I thought it went pretty well, too. I'm more on the back burners on that part. That's more JC's thing, but she does a lot of hard work and does a pretty good job with it, I think.
Well, then continue.
I do have one other quick question. Can I hire a second office person? We really could use a second one in the office. Rachel is currently, we only have me and JC and Rachel. We will be getting a new food, nutrition, health educator. And so it would be really helpful if we could have a second office employee like we've always had to help. We've got a new reporting system where we will have to be reporting more throughout the year. And for me to keep up with all my call volume and getting all that in there, among other things, it would be very beneficial to have a second office person that can help with that kind of thing.
We'll talk about that at committee meetings here in a couple of weeks and see how we're going to react to that or with the contract. I think with this new contract, if we can get it together, it will make it easier with that as well. Because there has been discussion about Windsor's staff in the building and things like that, you know, during regular business hours. And then how we manage county staff out there that's by themselves or not observed by others and things like that. So we have had some discussions on that, but I'll put that on committee meetings and we'll talk about that in human resources in 2 weeks. And won't dally like we have.
I was going to say, can we get a timeline so that I can? I mean, it would be very beneficial to have somebody in place by the first of the year, just based on our reporting and everything.
We will talk about that and also potential contract negotiations with the university. I'd like to wrap that all into one so that when we put a package over, it's all together, mm-hmm. and then it. I'm hoping when we're done, it's a lot easier, and then you're not even asking us stuff. We're just putting in claims. I would like to make it that easy.
Okay.
So it's black and white. Ideally, here's the budget. We're going to work with that, and that's the end of the story, basically.
That'd be lovely.
And then at the end of the year, as long as you don't go over that dollar amount. Everybody's happy. But we're the beginning of November. Let's have something back to you by the beginning of December, at least as far as a direction. I don't know how quickly we can move with Dave, but obviously, Roger, if we do any contract negotiations, he'll be involved in that, or at least he'll ask, what mess did you tell them we would abide by? But yeah, I'm hoping we have something back to you sooner than that on a staff member, but let's put out that as a line, at least, where we'll have something to you, hopefully sooner, and then by that time, hopefully, we're within a state of negotiation with Dave also.
Okay.
Would you like Dave at that committee meeting, or you're saying a different one? I'm just thinking I can try to coordinate if needed.
I don't know if he would need to be at that first one already, because we'll talk about the contract we have and kind of a direction there. I would say shortly thereafter, though, we could talk to Dave sometime after that meeting.
When is that meeting?
That next one would be...
We're further in the year than you thought.
Yeah, the 13th of November would be our next committee meeting.
Holiday?
How long would Dave need, once he gets whatever we have for him, what are his processes to go through? Say we propose a contract, how much time does he generally need before, or I'm assuming it's Dave.
Right, yeah, it'll be Dave. That's why I kind of looped him in to just this conversation to rise it a little bit higher up. I would say it all depends. After that second and third week in November, things kind of slow down, I think, in the state office for him. And so kind of that end of November, beginning of December would probably be a good time. As long as we can get things, the university closes down the second half of December. So if he's reaching out, if he needs to talk to the university's legal, I think we can definitely, it's I can let him know, and he can maybe put some holds on some calendars for people following the 15th. And see what he can do for calendar holds.
Maybe we can roughly figure trying to set up a meeting the week of the 13th at the extension officer here, with if Dave's available sometime that week.
We could look at maybe the 16th or 17th, that we have a annual conference, so we'll all be out in Kearney the 14th and 15th. But I'll
roughly let's look at that possibly, and then if we can get something together at the beginning of the week, then we can start talking. Otherwise, we're going to go another 6 months, and
I need someone before 6 months from now.
No, so that would be good. That might light a little bit of a fire and kind of start pushing things.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you both. Mr. Lytle?
Do we need to place that one on file?
We could.
We'll make that motion then.
Second.
All right.
Moved by Lytle, second by Dorn. Place the extension educator update on file, quarterly update. Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Up next, approve or disapprove resolution 23-20 on signing the year-end certification of county highway superintendent.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Dorn. Any discussion on this item? This is basically a routine item. For the roads, the not a buyback dollar from a state, but basically some of the incentive payments from the state. If there's no discussion, we have a motion by Lytle, second by Dorn to approve.
Okay.
Resolution 23-20. Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Following that, approve year-end certification of highway superintendent for determining incentive payment in calendar year 23 and authorizing the chairman to sign this certification. Would be the next phase of that, or the next piece of that.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Juergens, second by Dorn. Do we need any explanation on this one at all?
No, it's just it's one to know when we had a
highway superintendent for certified what license number he has and that, and it all plays into that payment.
Which we do annually, and Mark is certified.
The page there, it's on the
why do you get to decide? We don't need a discussion on it.
Well, I said no, meaning no, that this is what it is. Sorry.
Has it always been worded that way? It looks different.
No, that's what
I think it's the same.
They used to do it a little different where they just send the form to us and we had to complete the license number and that to verify we had a highway superintendent.
Okay.
But now they're...
I'm getting old. I don't remember everything.
You're getting old?
You don't know what old is.
Ain't dried behind the ears yet.
Would you pass that down for them to sign? We have a motion by Juergens, second by Dorn. Any discussion on this? Line me to sign. If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries.
And you can also state that through this, too. So that plus
this is the initial. What's another 8?
Plus amount here. $79, $6,190.
Thank you, Roger. Up next, approve or disapprove resolution number 23-21 for amendment and addendum to NERMA 2 intergovernmental interlocal agreements. NERMA, of course, is both our work comp carrier as well as our liability insurance carrier. NERMA is a pool between the counties. I believe there's 108 members now, somewhere in the upper hundreds, between ag societies, counties, and areas on aging. This year's dividend from NERMA, which our dividend is basically our money that wasn't spent through claims over the years, which is distributed out through a formula to its members, a total is going to be $17,685. $11,500 of that was normal, and then $6,190 for a recommitment for 3 years. I believe Gage County, since starting with NERMA, has received somewhere around $250,000 back and fees that we paid out that we otherwise wouldn't have. I sit as NERMA's treasurer, representing Gage County and the different members, and I was reelected here a couple weeks ago to the NERMA board. Looking at some of the places that we have bid insurance, NERMA's consistently been a lot lower. I mean, it's been a very good investment for whoever the members of the board were that decided to go with the pool years ago. It's paid out not only in our dividends back, but in our savings year to year. I know that was controversial for a while as we were going through the Beatrice 6 and through that process, but NERMA at that time is looking at the pool as a whole. Our pool totals are around $35 million. We just had a study showing where we should be. We're very safe on both the NERMA and NERMA 2 pools. NERMA 2 would be the work comp side of things. Our reserves are in good shape as we lost a fair amount of money through investments and the market. Those were all unrealized gains. There was a strong enough base there that we didn't have to sell off any assets. So as the market's recovered, NERMA's recovered. Also, as the CDs that we could get at half of 1% have expired, we've increased those. So a lot of those are at 4.75 to 5% now. So pool's in fantastic shape. Coverage for the counties and its members are in really good shape. And although coverages have changed, it'd be my recommendation to continue forward with coverage with NERMA.
You being treasurer helps on that, right?
It definitely doesn't help us. Or it doesn't hurt us on that side of things.
You know, it took quite a bit of controversy back in the 90s when we joined. There was someone on the board at the time didn't think it was a good idea. They thought that the local insurance representatives would be better. But we fought hard and we got it, okay? And I think it's one of the best things that the county's done as far as liability purposes, okay? So
the savings really are incredible, putting everything together. And I know if we could have adjustments on the private side like our public agencies have had, everybody would jump on it. I know all of us personally have seen what the insurance market's done.
It's a three-year extension.
Three-year extension, and that's something else is risk mitigation, the training that we get. Don has done a really good job at trying to mitigate our risk out. Not always popular to mitigate risk because it's not fun, but by pre-mitigating, we can save a lot of money in the long run. And although most people don't notice it, those little changes make a huge difference. It's just one of those thankless pieces that we do put together to try to save money overall. I see Jurgen saying, all right, let's go.
Burning daylight.
Oh, second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Swavely to approve Resolution 23-21 for the amendment and addendum to NERMA and NERMA 2 intergovernmental and our local agreements. Any additional discussion? If not, please vote. 7 in favor, motion carries. Approve or disapprove Resolution 23-22 on special use permit number 2023-5 for the placement of a commercial agricultural business to be located on a tract of land located on a part of the northwest quarter of the northwest quarter, Section 356 in Holt Township.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Jurgens, second by Dorn. This, of course, is a seed business going up on north of Helmke's place, east side Highway 77, north Pickerel, I think 2.5 miles about, 3.5 miles north of Pickerel. Any discussion on this facility? We had a hearing on it 2 weeks ago. Seeing none, please vote. 7 in favor, motion carries. Following this, we may or may not have a recommendation for our culvert projects, and we also have a Resolution 2323 on Special Use Permit 2023-4. We will take a 10-minute recess at 9:44, reconvening approximately 9:54. We'll reconvene at 9:57. Mr. Conkey, do you have a recommendation for the board on the culverts project?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I sure do. I would recommend Ace Eaton for the culvert project for 1072, 1143, and 1232.
And that was for a total of $121,816.60?
Yes, sir.
I didn't write it all down. Was that the lowest bid?
Yes, sir. Ma'am.
Nice. I would ask for a motion to approve the bid for Ace Eaton in the amount of $121,816.60 for projects 1072, 1143, and 1232.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Shuler, second by Haxby. Any discussion on these bids? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. With that, we will be moving on to Resolution 20-23 for Special Use Permit 2023-4. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Shuler, do you want to make an announcement real quick?
Yes. Tomorrow evening, John Hay, a biological engineer with the University of Nebraska, who has done extensive research on alternative energy, will be at the Wymore Fire Hall at 6:30 to present a program in regards to wind and solar energy. I feel I've seen this presentation. He was in Blue Springs, over a little over a year ago, and there been expressed to me that more people were interested in attending that wasn't able to make it last year. So he will be back here in Wymore tomorrow evening, and if you're interested, it's whether you're pro or con, it's very detailed, and he's gathered data from not only his own but research from other universities, and which I feel is accurate and unbiased as you could get at the present time. Oh, the time is 6:30 p.m.
Wymore Event Center.
Wymore Fire Hall, their office building or their meeting room adjoining the fire hall.
Southeast side of town, basically.
Yes, from Hope Wymore. Well, see, actually, I think it's 118 West D Street, and it's across the street north of what used to be Good Samaritan Center in Wymore. It's now Hope Wymore.
Thank you, Mr. Schuler.
Yeah, thank you.
With that, we'll have, and this is for you as well, Ms. Haxby, Resolution 23-23, I'm sorry. Special use permit 2023-4. This is an item for a CAFO. I will have to recuse myself on this, so I will hand the meeting over to Ms. Haxby at this time.
All right, so on the agenda is approve or disapprove resolution on special use permit 2023-4 for the placement of a swine feeding operation to be located on a tract of land located on part of southwest quarter of the northwest quarter of Section 25 of Island Grove Township. 2 weeks ago, we had our public hearing, so now we're moving into our discussion. I'd ask Roger to go over what the vote's going to look like.
The regulations or zoning rules 6.2 lay out a situation in which we have 20% of the adjoining landowners, if they file a protest, which they have done in this case, it's been verified by Lisa and the county clerk. So that kicks in that provision. That should be simple enough. If you read the rest of that, you wonder what the heck it actually says. And I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of legalese and stuff, but at this point, I'm going to say it's going to take 5 votes, even though Mr. Thiemann had to recuse himself because of conflict. It's going to be 5 votes for affirmative action on this. So just wanted to be the clear, because I know it's kind of like the horses. There's been a lot of rumors going around.
Okay.
Tough crowd.
Thank you, Mr.
Hirsch. All right. Thank you. And then, Eric, with that recusal, would you like to state why you're recusing yourself?
Prior to discussion on this, we sent a form up to the Accountability and Disclosure Commission. If you have potential financial interests, positive or negative, to yourself or immediate family, you may have a conflict of interest. So I don't remember the form.
C2.
A C2 form went to the Accountability and Disclosure Commission from both myself and Eddie Dorn. Eddie came back. There was not a conflict. Mine came back since I had done a little bit of work on that Hanover project, that I may have conflict on this project, and Accountability and Disclosure, I guess, recommended or stated that I need to remove myself from this discussion and this vote.
Okay. Thank you. With that, I will open it up to the board. Who would like to start? That's why I'm asking for, would there be a motion to start? We have to have a motion and a second to start discussion.
I'll make a motion to approve.
There's been a motion by Terry. Do we have a second?
I'll second it with some amendments, though. I won't go for the first motion.
We can add that, but
okay.
So we have a motion and by Terry and a second by Dave. Dave, would you like to add your amendments then?
Yeah, I took a while to sit and figure this out, but there's some things that I think that are important to this whole project, and if it passes, it passes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I got it handwritten, so you'll have to bear with me because I don't have a copier for my computer at home, okay? But first one, there's five things, okay? The first one, there shall be three rows of trees on each side of the facility running the span of the building length and width plus an additional minimum of 10 feet and connecting, excluding driveways, waterways, field accesses, those things, okay? They'll be planted at a minimum of 2 feet in height with a variety of evergreen species and at least one row of western red cedar trees. They must be maintained over the life of the facility. If the tree must be replaced, it must be redone within 1 year of its demise and of similar size. Trees need to be planted before the livestock enter the facility. Two, there should be a minimum of 3 groundwater wells. I'm sorry, that was two. Three, the facility shall maintain the state's requirement of 180 days of holding. Pre-winter, all manure shall be injected in the ground unless there is an emergency situation. In that instance, surface application will be acceptable. However, if surface application is within a half a mile of a dwelling, a business, or a school or church, the applicant will be required to furnish a written good neighbor agreement. Any application of manure, surface, or injected shall maintain 100 feet buffer from any tile and or waters of the state. It shall also be the up to the owner of the facility to make sure the farmer abides by these rules when they're applying the manure. The applicant shall utilize and incinerate all mortality and shall acquire all necessary permits, air quality permits and those things, okay, and have approved by the state before construction can begin. As a secondary mortality management practice, the emergency purposes, dead pile for rendering shall not be visible from the road. And if composting is used, the area in which they are composted must have a concrete floor and sides. The applicant shall not apply for a national pollution discharge system permit at any time in regards to discharging livestock waste.
Okay, so we have a motion to amend by Dave. Do we have a second?
Yeah.
Can I get that?
Can we just continue
to discuss?
Right, we would need a second to discuss. Do we have a second so we can discuss that amendment? You can second it.
Second, then she
all right, we have a second by Terry. Do we have any discussion on that amendment?
Wait a minute. I made a call to get copies of this. What did you just do?
There was a motion by Dave to amend and a second by Terry.
Okay, Dave was the second to the...
Dave was the second to the motion to approve, and then we had an amendment to the motion.
Doesn't Terry just have to approve?
I was going to say, I thought he, yeah. Okay, let me copy this.
He did it as a motion to amend, so.
Okay, so the motion to amend.
And then Juergens seconded it.
Okay. So we'll get copies of that so everybody can have copies of those conditions. Everybody. Copies of that. So then everybody has what he wrote. So you have that.
Yeah, they can go ahead and discuss it while they're waiting.
Yeah, you
for
can. I'm just saying we're getting copies for you. So.
You might have a hard time reading it because it's longhand.
I think from Ilo's, I pulled up our conditions from last time and they were all very similar. There were a couple changes in there. So, yes.
I think in the past, on a deal like this, we were asked to read in our 7 considerations we should figure. Shall I read that in now?
Well, Roger? I think once you get a motion ready to go, I think that's when the presenter of the motion or the second should go through those 7.
Okay.
Guidelines, yes, absolutely.
Shall I read those now?
while we're waiting?
Yeah, you can. I mean, there's no timeline on it.
Right. except as otherwise proven herein, no special use permit shall be granted by the county board without an affirmative vote of the majority of the members of the Gage County Board. The providing the proposed use is found to comply with the following guidelines. Number one, be compatible with and similar to the use permitted in the district and not be a matter which would require rezoning of the property and not be detrimental to adjacent property, not tend to depreciate the value of the surrounding structures and or property, be compatible with the stated intended use of the district, not change the character of the district, and be in accordance with the comprehensive plan.
We have a motion to approve with a motion to amend by Dave. Do we have any discussion on that?
Well, I'll say the same as I did for the Hanover project, and this is based on my experience as a windbreak planner, that a 2-foot tall tree eliminate the local source for trees, and a 2-foot tall tree doesn't mean you'll have any taller or any better success with the windbreak. A seedling is actually your best opportunity or best chances for obtaining a good windbreak, and this windbreak will be watered. A 2-foot tall tree limits to where you can buy it and how you can plant it. So it does offer some issues in regards to getting a windbreak planted. But it's what's in the Hanover regulations, and so that's what you're doing is matching that. I stated the same thing at that time. I don't agree with that, but that's...
It's fine.
Yeah, I'm just stating that.
What we're here for.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any discussion on those amendments? I think at this time we can go forward with the vote of those amendments just so that we can continue discussion on the overall part of that. So this vote would be just for adding that amendment that Dave stated to the initial motion. It is not a vote for or against this resolution at this time. It is for the amendment only. So a motion.
May I add some discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to be clear about the rows of trees. 3 rows of cedars on all 4 sides?
Not cedars, pine, just 1 row of cedars.
Okay, because planning and zoning asks for 2 rows of cedars.
Okay.
So you're going...
An extra row.
An extra row of pines. So it's 2 rows of cedars, 1 row of
pines. No, I did... It says... Let me get back to it here. Let me find it, okay? A variety of evergreen species and at least 1 row of cedars, a red cedar. So it says a variety of pines and 1 row of cedars.
Okay.
Okay.
Which is different than...
Well.
Yeah.
This is, I believe, and I got to pull it up, but I believe that was the same as the last one. So just to be clear, I just want to clarify before we vote. A vote for would be to accept Dave's amendment. A vote against would be to not accept the amendment. Okay. I'd ask everybody please vote. Five in favor with Schuler voting nay and Tiemann abstaining. So amendment passes. So what we're looking at is a motion to approve. I'm going to summarize these if that's all right, Dave.
Help yourself.
All right. The conditions are the 3 rows of trees, planted 2 foot in height. There's going to be 3 groundwater wells. They're in an emergency situation is the only time that it can be surface applied. And if it is surface applied, there's a half a mile good neighbor agreement that would be required. For mortality, they're going to use the incinerator, but they need an air quality permit. The other ones, if they're using rendering, the dead pile shall not be observed from the road, and composting, they need concrete, and the applicant shall not apply for the discharge permit at any time. I will open it back up for discussion. Gary?
Actually, I want to start with a question for Roger. Respective to Island Grove's decision to hold the stance that they aren't going to do anything until there's a decision made in this board on this project, if and when this goes to a vote, if it's approved, at that point, there is really no... the project can move forward without anybody agreeing with Island Grove to do any improvements on the road or whatever. It's kind of out there, right? Is there something that we need to include here in our decision to place some type of a constraint or whatever to take care of the Island Grove Township roads if this is put in place? You get where I'm going?
And I understand where you're going. Again, I guess my answer would be the concern there should be everybody's at this meeting as well as everybody in the township because it deals with the safety. And I think the township board knows that, and they're concerned about it. There was discussion when we had that meeting. And again, I wasn't privy to, basically the county officials that facilitated the meeting, we left. So I'm not sure what the discussion was, nor is it any of our business because it is a township road. And, we can certainly encourage them if they had a situation. Let's say it was approved. We need some help doing this. And I know there was some discussion with Summit the co-applicant as far as assisting on that. There's also some advantages when the construction phase is there. At least that's some of the things I recall on that. But as far as this board dictating or trying to order that, that's where you get into that circular motion. It's their road. But again, there are situations where the county has helped out in certain situations dealing with road issues or bridges. If you're asking, can you put a condition on that? That'd be a pretty tough condition. I don't know if it's enforceable.
That's why I asked.
Yeah. As far as saying it has to come up to a certain standard or something like that, again, I think as Mr. Conkey had said during that meeting, once the county gets involved, we get into all kinds of rules and regulations regarding standards for the roads. And I think his position at that point was that it was a maintenance issue that basically needed some assistance. And again, maintenance means money. And I think everybody understands that. Well, it does. And that's a tough situation. But does that answer your question, or is it dance around it as much as I can?
I think I can sort through the weeds there and figure out that no, we're not going to do
anything. Again, that's one of those questions that, hopefully, and I'll use the other one as an example. There was some kind of an agreement. I have no idea what that agreement was. And that's the best way to have an agreement between two parties, and they're both happy. And
I guess the reason I ask Roger is that, I'm aware of the area. I haven't driven a fuel truck for 15 years, so I haven't been out there near as often as I used to be. But I did drive it. I did drive it a couple times here within the last couple months. I would consider that those roads are not unsafe at this point in time, because for the local area that they are right now, they're fine. If you introduce more more traffic to it, with possible people that are not aware of the neighborhood, it might become unsafe at that point. But at this point, I would say that they are safe roads. The people that use them, it's a low, you know, low use, and people that use them, it's safe at this point. I haven't agreed. I didn't say anything in the previous meeting when people want to bring up that road is unsafe, and that it is a safe road at this point. People just need to be aware of what they're doing and aware of their surroundings when they're driving on it. It's not a 65 mile an hour with your BMW from Liberty up to a mile east of Virginia. That's the reason I asked, because, you know, with Island Township deciding not to do anything until this is decided, I guess I'm a little concerned.
I guess with that, Gary, I have, I guess, a follow-up question for more of a just generalized for the board. If it is our policy or our standard that if somebody builds a home on a dirt road, it is their responsibility, financial responsibility, to make that road a conditional that is usable to them. So whose financial responsibility is it to put a commercial facility on a road that would otherwise not handle it? I don't have a good answer for that, but I mean, it is our policy. I feel like it'd be a double standard if we don't follow through with that.
The only one I could think of is E Energy. And I know it won't be popular for that one, but you asked the question. There's one.
But if somebody builds a home on a dirt road, they've got to rock the road. We don't do it for them.
Mm-hmm. Half the cost.
They typically don't
they
bring
for half the
jobs
cost
into the county either.
Of the rock, I'm sorry. Just of the rock.
That's on a county road, not necessarily a town.
Most townships
do that.
The township makes the road up to state standards, and then the homeowner pays for half the cost of the rock to their residents.
I think I'm thinking of two offhand that it wasn't half, it was all of it.
In my time frame, it's been half the cost.
Okay. I don't know. You know, a friend of mine built just on the county line east of Virginia. And I don't know whether it was Gage or the other county, but it was on a unmaintained road. He bought a lot, and he built a place, and the township had to rock his road up to his house. So, and I don't know how. I don't know if it was Gage or whether it was Johnson, but
it's just a question. I don't have a.
Well, for sake of debate. This road is a school bus route, and how much different would a school bus route safety conditions be different than a commercial road with heavier traffic?
A lot.
We are having any public.
Just for sake of debate, we've been told it isn't safe for school buses at the present time. I'm not sure that's my opinion, but that's what we've been told. I tend to agree with Gary. You know the kind of roads that's there, what area you're in, the traffic level, and you drive accordingly. That's what I do, and, you know, we all need to be aware of what the conditions are around us, and just because it's a so-called public road doesn't mean it's as safe as, let's say, a county road that has more traffic. But it has been brought up, so that's what
Terry?
That's what I ponder.
In answer to Dave's question, I think every township does have different policies that they use when, like, building a structure or something, so. And they all vary. that I remember. So that's probably different from some townships or townships to other ones.
Again, for sake of debate, and this is things that I ponder, is that if we use the amount of traffic here for reasoning, it makes it a difference on this decision, then what happens in the next decision we make? Somebody wants to put in a wedding venue or a large grain bin, which will create extra traffic at certain times of the year. Do we take these same things into consideration? So that's why I look at, okay, how's this decision going to affect decisions for other projects in the future? Many farmers are putting up, and rightfully so, large grain bin facilities, and obviously that's going to create traffic at least twice a year at harvest to that facility and at hauling it out. Now, if they're on a, you know, depending on what kind of road they're on, you know, perhaps that doesn't, at the present time, require a special use permit. They do need to get a building permit. But we can create issues by the decisions we're making today that's going to affect other businesses. And is that where we want to go? And that makes this decision difficult. I understand the position of all these people here. I live close to the area myself. Removed enough that obviously it wouldn't affect me, but I try to look at this as, what if it was a half mile from me and I'm a county supervisor? How would I vote? Would I have to recuse myself because I'm that close? Or can, and that's a legal question, it doesn't need to be answered now, but how do I vote for that if I can vote? Because it's a half mile from my place. And it's tough, very tough. I tend to be a rule follower. Rules are set. We've made rules, or this county, prior to me being on the board, have been made for guidelines. And can I arbitrarily change them to suit myself if it's a half mile from my property? So I put myself in all your shoes, whether you believe it or not, and I've got to think beyond my own personal emotions about this and keep my emotions out of this decision in order to try to make a good decision for the county and the future of the county. Oh.
Does anybody have anything else?
Before I forget it, just to make a complete record, I would ask the board to basically receive all the exhibits from the public hearing, including the testimony of all the people that testified, including everything I know we've gotten. I think Lisa's provided copies of all that stuff, and I just, let's make a complete record, so ask for a motion to do that.
Can we do that amid another motion?
Well, it's kind of aside, but with my memory, I didn't want to forget about that. It's kind of important.
Should we do it? I'll make a note to do it afterwards.
You can do a motion.
During a motion?
Yes.
Okay.
Even though I can't, that's why I can't make the motion. Otherwise, I just do it.
Yes, Dave.
I wrote this because, you know, this is really, really hard, okay? You know, we've sworn to an oath to abide by the laws, and if all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted, you know, we don't have really any recourse. But if you look at all the information that we've been given over the time, and you think about the things, you got to lean sometimes towards, you know, are they right or are they wrong? I mean, I'm sorry that the way they feel. Maybe I would, just like Don said, I would feel the same way. But we have a job to do, okay, right or wrong. That's one of the reasons I put some of these extra things in here, because, you know, we know that if this gets approved shortly afterwards, there's going to become a different landowner down there for a small parcel of land, and then the farmer's going to farm the ground, okay? Somebody has to watch that. Somebody has to make sure that, you know, the farmer's doing his job, and I'm not saying he doesn't, okay? I have no idea, but I know how farmers do. I was raised around a farm, and we take all kinds of things for granted sometimes that we're allowed to do or not to do, even though there's stipulations and rules for it. So I think it's important that we added some of these things to make somebody responsible, because there's a lot of things that could, I'm not saying it's going to, but could happen if there's a leak or something down there that it gets into the waterways for the lake, okay? So, I mean, that's why I took some time and wrote these things out, okay? So
I would like to ask, I mean, it has been brought up, of course, about runoff into the ponds, lakes, Bloody Run Creek, and who's responsible? Dave just brought that up. And I would like Summit Pork to address this. It is in the contract, the agreement, or the easement that they have with the property owner, and how, what the arrangement is as far as applying the waste, and who's responsible if they do not follow the rules, as, for example, the 100-foot radius on the tile outlets. Mitch, could you address that?
You bet. Thank you. The state has issued our permit to construct and operate the facility, and the site owner, Summit Pork, is obligated and to follow all the rules and regulations for applying that manure to the fields. We have an agreement with the Otto family, as the manure is going to their farm, but it's our authority and our responsibility to have that applied timely and per the code, as well as the stipulations that David has recommended here today. So if those aren't followed for some reason, it's Summit's liability and responsibility to maintain compliance with that permit. So we will expect that to be done. And I don't see that we would allow an operator to do it any other way than per the letter of the law, as the permit requires. Yep. So it's Summit's responsibility to have the manure applied, our responsibility to choose who applies it. And in this case, at this time, the Otto being the owner operator of the land it's being applied to, we've chosen them to be that applicator, but there's no long-term contract commitment with them whatsoever, as if there would be anybody else if it was a third-party contractor. Otto's and Summit may choose to use a third-party contractor to do that application, but there's no specific, it's Summit, the site owner's responsibility to maintain compliance and ensure it's done properly, and the state oversees that regulation.
And as I read your easement, and that will be recorded at the courthouse,
correct,
that Summit Pork is responsible, and if I understand this correctly, of course Dean owns the property that's in the nutrient management plan, but Dean is not necessarily the designated applicator, just that in this situation he's presently going to be the one you hire.
Correct.
So he's a custom operator working for you, applying it to his own property.
That's correct. The Ottos have granted us an easement for application.
So him or anybody else that you've made this agreement with, because the agreement isn't specific to Dean other than it's his property that it's being applied to.
That's correct.
So if Dean chooses not to apply it himself, or you choose not to hire Dean, you have that option.
Correct.
But it's still in the easement that it goes on his property.
Correct.
Now, if you need to choose somebody else's property for whatever reason, how does that
happen? Yep. Previous other discussions, there's an amendment process to our manure management plan. So in order to apply on a field that currently isn't in the plan or under easement agreement, we'd have a process with the state to bring that field into the manure management plan, and we must follow all those same rules and regulations on additional acres.
Okay.
Yep. And that's the purpose of the manure management plan that runs with this site.
Because we do have some talking points that was sent to us, and it's some of very, very good points are being made here. And some of these questions might be for Andy, but I'll let you decide that. First one here is about livestock mortality. Carcass disposal will be incinerated, with secondary methods being rendering, burial, composting, or landfill. But the nutrient management plan doesn't say where the incinerator is located or how long carcasses will be temporarily stored at the CAFO before being buried on site or removed off the site for permanent disposal. So that is not in the plan. But I do know.
So let me say,
incinerator, and you've got a building.
Yep. So let me share this. With an incinerator permit, we must identify the location of that incinerator on the site to receive the permit, of which we have received the permit on the first site. I need to check, but I'm sure we have applied for and will be receiving that permit on the second site as well, if we haven't done so already. If it hasn't been received yet, but I believe it has been.
At the present time, this permit does not indicate where that incinerator building. I mean, you've applied for
the construction permit. It's a totally separate permit for operating incinerators. Yes.
Okay, and that's the one you're waiting.
I believe we received it. I just don't have my notes up here to say what date. I just know we have to have it, and per your amendment that's being voted on today, we'll have to have that before we start. So.
But this indicates, and I haven't checked the accuracy, but this talking points indicates that it does not show on the current, and perhaps it's the NDE application, the site of the incinerator.
Right. They're two different applications.
So that's why. And it is.
Yep.
Okay. I don't want to take a lot of time, but there's things that's important here. Carcass storage, if it is to be buried. And why do you need a burial site if the plan is not to bury?
That's right. So with anything no different than, say, the emergency situation with the manure condition, similar to, say, there's a catastrophic loss of mortality, that incinerator isn't built to incinerate a catastrophic loss in the time it's needed. Therefore, you have other options that are also legal and shared as a backup plan.
And Dave did cover that within the amendment, said for the secondary mortality management practices, the dead pile shall not be visible, and the composting has to have a concrete floor and sides.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it too,
I think that's in the plan, isn't it?
It's policy not to have deads visible from the road, and certainly you don't want to put them outside in the middle of winter. They're freeze, and then you have to thaw them and incinerate them. So we agree with all that the conditions that were stated as we were on the first site.
How often do you incinerate?
Daily, based on mortality.
Sure.
Right. Hopefully.
So you don't let them pile up?
Absolutely not.
But that is that stated in the plan? That's a tough question, but that's what's indicated here.
Yeah, I think we just refer to best management practices. I mean, Andy may be able to comment on mortality and requirements, but I wouldn't expect you to ever see a pile of deads unless we're transitioning them from the building to a backup mortality plan. But the incinerator building in these sites is now we are now connecting that to the building, so that mortality won't even go outside from the building they're housed in to the incinerator.
A quick question on the easement that was brought up. You brought up the easement that they had for manure. On the previous application, that easement stated that ground had to be found within 3 miles. How do you plan on finding,
That's specific if that parcel of land under easement, if that individual, the landowner, wanted that easement released from his property, that we would automatically agree to release it if there's like property found within that same distance. Yep.
So it's only releasing that from the easement?
Correct. Because the easement runs with the land and with the site for the life of it. I will take a moment and share regarding the road in the township. As soon as we get through this meeting, Summit will be contacting the township to discuss their perspective on what they would like to see done in our our willingness to participate with them. So our stance has not changed on the road. Similar to others, the road's passable. It's a grade A. Let's just say it's not a dirt road. It's a maintained road today. Certainly, there's been some lack of maintenance in the right of ways of that, but we continue to have the same opinion we have in the past in working with the township to improve any safety aspects we can with them on that road. But just want to share that. Go ahead.
Back to the application of the waste and being injected, and they have to stay away from the riser, 100-foot radius of the riser. Is Summit going to monitor that to be sure that's being done? Or occasionally, I mean, it happens only once a year. Do you drive out the field and see that those rules are being followed? How do we know? I mean, I would rather not wait for a complaint.
Absolutely, us neither. And the applicator we chose at this time has been a part of all these meetings and knows those rules and regs as well, and certainly Andy's team from a compliance and an oversight standpoint. So we're fully committed to ensuring compliance all the way
and
through.
And nothing against Dean, but regardless, I mean, just this is in your other contracts. This isn't just this one.
Yep.
This is in all your contracts, I would take it. The same way, well, in Iowa, is that the person you hire has to follow, and then you're responsible, and you can check and should
absolutely
check that they're following the rules.
Right.
I believe that was in Dave's statement as well. He said it shall be up to the owner of the facility to make sure the farmer abides by those stipulations. Question with that. For, I guess, Dave, what would be the recourse for not following that?
I put that in there, but I don't know how big a teeth it's got because, you know, it could be that they start unloading and Summit knows they're doing it, but they go check maybe one or two risers and say, okay, he's doing it right, but that doesn't mean that it's going to happen to all 19 of them, okay? So I put that in there. I don't know how much teeth it's got, but it's something that says that somebody has to be responsible for it. Now, if there's there's something happens to it, then we have the right to go back, or somebody has the right to go back to Summit and say, hey, you screwed up. How are you going to fix it? But, I mean, there has to be two people looking at it. This can't be one person, okay? It's that way with everything, not just with this situation, but with everything that's done. You're always better to have two sets of eyes looking at it than just somebody taking off and supposedly doing their job. So,
but Summit Pork does have teeth in their own contract. Still have to check to see it's being done.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, you have to rely that, and I'm not saying they're not going. You have to rely that Summit's going to do their job and Otto's going to do his job, okay? But, you know, there's nobody there to double check them, okay? The one has to trust the other one, and I'm sure that is, or they wouldn't have gone in business together, okay? But it's just the idea that, you know, it's there that somebody has to verify it. That's all. So
I would just add one point of clarification from a responsibility standpoint is that the state operating permit that has already been applied for and received, Summit Pork is the sole permit holder. So the state will hold Summit accountable to everything that is listed in the Nutrient Management Plan and the Operation and Maintenance Plan. Now, at the Canada level, you have co-applicants, and your teeth is, you know, you have processes for these conditions, but you haven't said anything in these conditions that are outside of the responsibility of Summit Pork at the state level as well. So,
can you state your name, please, too, as well?
I'm sorry, Andy Schulting with Nutrient Advisors. You need address?
No.
Do you want any more clarification on mortality?
Well, the answer to the burial is because of a catastrophic event that you have more animals to dispose of than what the incinerator can do in a timely manner. An emergency situation is that you are allowed to bury.
I think the only thing that I heard that maybe wasn't totally clarified is you asked about location of temporary storage and incinerator. I think it's been clear that the incinerator is a separate permit regulated by NDEE. In that application, the location is specified, so the ag section does not get involved in that. We have identified a temporary mortality storage location in the plan, and that's on page 4.3 in section 4. It just identifies a point of reference of where temporary storage would occur. Your conditions have included concrete not being visible from the road. The state does not specify that, but your conditions will. And obviously, they're willing to abide by that.
Thank you. Emissions of the incinerator is... That's a question in here. Potential with result in potential serious adverse environmental and public health impacts. It's not, let's see. Okay, how air emissions are or will be, okay, no, I'll read it all. Nowhere is there any statement about where the incinerators are or will be located, which we've already discussed, or how air emissions that could cause a nuisance or other public health problem will be prevented.
So we must, in our permit that we receive for the operation of the incinerator, we have to report back to NDEON for the during operation and life of that incinerator. So that is all addressed in that permit that we must have to operate incineration, as well as afterburners and monitoring of that. So totally separate permit that the state must issue in order for us to operate.
Yeah. And there's different thresholds that you have to identify as part of that application of what you're burning, how often you're burning, essentially how much will be going into the air, and those thresholds determine what type of permit you're applying for. So those benchmarks and thresholds are identified early on to know what type of permit we're pursuing, and therefore the air permit that's been applied for is relative to the proposed emissions.
Now, I know this air quality permit is based on, like, your pollution emissions for at least the NDEE's part of it, but is there any, like, account of the odor that it will create when you're burning?
There really is not. The pollutants under the air division are particulate matter and gases that are identified based on what you're burning and how often, how much. And so it's really about a load of emissions into the air that certainly contributes to odor, but that's not, it's pretty impossible to regulate and create odor thresholds. So it's based on particulate matter and gas emissions rather than measuring odor somehow.
This goes on to ask about a catastrophic event for applying the waste. So you mentioned before, like, maybe 2 out of every 10 years that you wouldn't be able to inject the waste because of wet conditions, possibly even land apply at all. And is there a contingency plan for that situation?
Can you speak to that?
Yeah.
I would say 2 out of 10 is way too high. I think I said last meeting, I've been doing this work for 18 years. I've had it happen at one facility 1 year where they just plain and simple, there was no opportunity to pump out. Everybody is highly incentivized to inject this manure. That's where the value comes from. That's where the nitrogen is capitalized. That's what keeps odor and complaints down. Everybody has the same motive to get this manure out of the pit and inject it in a timely manner. If Dean's too late, and it's frozen ground or wet ground, and he doesn't get it injected, he's lost a large majority of his value for the year. So everybody's highly incentivized. The backup plan would be surface application in the event that you just can't drag an injector through the field. But again, that it would truly have to be a catastrophic and just really undue circumstances that's going to happen, because nobody wins in that circumstance.
Yeah. Is it... Things can happen. I mean, as a farmer, I know, like, oh, this will never happen, but it can, even if it's once in 50 years, and then you still got to deal with it. Can this be applied, such if you can't get in a cropland field, but you could get in a sod field? Can the waste be applied? Would the state allow to put it out on pasture? So that you could get in the field, you know? I mean, it would hold you, support?
Yeah, absolutely.
Honey wagon?
Yeah, actually, grass and pasture is listed in the plan as an alternative crop. Grass utilizes nutrients. There's many operations in the western part of Nebraska that are raising livestock, and they have grass pasture exclusively in their nutrient management plan.
And, of course, you would have to get approval from the state in order to apply it to this land. You'd have to locate it from the streams and ponds and so forth. The criteria.
It doesn't have pasture, so this would be new land, and yes.
And you'd have to go through the process.
Yes.
So that is an option to that very extreme, unlikely condition that it could happen.
Yep. And I think I mentioned in the public hearing, the decision that would be made to surface apply is only in the circumstance where the decision is, do we get it out of the pit or let the pit run over? I mean, it would have to be that catastrophic. And I think in that circumstance, everyone would agree that it would be better to surface apply on farmland or pasture rather than let the pit run over and have a direct discharge into the creek. So nobody wants that. Nobody's incentivized to do that. But it is important to have that possibility because it can happen.
Things can happen, yes. Another issue that was brought up is the sludge and the solids in the waste. If too much is being accumulated, how would that be handled if you can't get it applied at agronomic rates?
I'm trying to make this brief, back to even the comments on the 180-day storage, and there's all of those one-if scenarios, and we are... have a long track record of successfully operating these facilities and maintaining the pit capacities and manure in suspension. And there's all kinds of ways to mitigate those risks, and we do that all the time to ensure we operate successfully on a day-to-day basis to prevent those situations from arising. The only reason that the condition is in there, so because none of us have a crystal ball of what's going to happen tomorrow, right? So it's just ensuring that's the last resort is applying to ensure we don't cause a more so manure isn't running directly to a stream or into a tile or something like that. You can relocate the pigs and put the facility on hold until the application. There's all kinds of things you will do or we will do ahead of that pulling the trigger and saying, state, we must apply in order to protect the waters or anything else at this facility. So I'd like to just end with that saying, you know, this is that scenario is like the absolute last resort. There's all kinds of things we do day in, day out to ensure that facility is maintained and operated successfully for its life.
Well, as I understand it, there isn't much for solids in this waste to start with because of the type of rations you feed them.
Yep. Very valuable product for fertilizing crops that ultimately can be, you know, are produced in the area to feed back to livestock or go to ethanol or what have you.
Another issue is when it has been discussed before that once you take out the 100-foot radius, do you have enough land to apply the waste to?
Yes.
And as it states here, it's been said yes because there's available land and other, maybe not even in Gage County, but you presently don't have permission or contract on those acres, but you would be required to move those acres, just like it's been repeated before, but...
If I can speak to the tile riser and your proposed condition just a little bit, completely at your discretion and what you want to do. As I mentioned last time, the requirement for the 100-foot setback is a flat 100 feet unless an applicant can display that they're doing something that is even more safe to prevent runoff. Injection of manure, typically the state has to use their discretion, but injection is one of those things that can minimize that setback. Another option is covering the tile for a period of time, a sleeve over the tile. And another one that I think is really important for you to consider with your 100-foot setback is these tile risers are in the base of the channel of the terrace, right? So typically, the 100-foot setback is more of a half moon on the upside of that terrace. It doesn't make any sense to require the 100-foot on the backside of the terrace that is 6-8 foot higher than the riser. So I would ask you to consider that in your condition.
So in reality, it's only half of that radius
typically
at each riser.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, it's considered an up gradient setback.
Plus the front slope of the terrace.
Right. Right.
It's serving.
Yep. But that's at your discretion. I mean, the condition.
Well, yeah.
But it is important to consider that because typically the backside of the terrace is not included because it's impossible for.
Because apparently at the present time, if you use the full 100-foot radius, the plan doesn't have enough acres in it currently.
If you truly had to do a 100-foot circle around every riser, that's right. I would remind that we did submit a list of nearly 900 additional acres that the dean has available to add to the permit when and if he needs to or he desires to take manure at other farms.
So you do have a list, and these yes. and the people on this list have been, you have permission
yes.
from them?
Yes.
So that is in hand to go to the state if you need to?
Yes.
The owner of the property, not just the farmer that farms it.
That's my understanding. Is that Dean has talked to some of it is his own land, and he's talked to the landowners.
Well, it'd have to be the landowners to meet the state requirements.
Yep.
They wouldn't approve it if otherwise.
You know, supposedly there was a number come up like 0.7 acres or something like that around these risers. Well, if you want to think the way I think about it, okay, is 100-foot. On all north, south, east, and west of each one of those risers, adds up to almost an acre.
Mm-hmm.
The word radius has come out, but you go 100 foot that way, 100 foot that way, 100 foot this way, 100 foot that way. That comes up to a square that's 4,000 square feet. So you know you're talking about 19 acres that they're taking away rather than that's how I look at it. And that may not be how you do, but when you say 100 foot each way.
Well, that would be 100 feet radius.
To me, that's a square. 100 foot each way. I got 100 foot here, 100 foot here, 100 foot there, okay?
It would be
that
a circle.
That equals 200 feet on each side, okay? So.
It would be a 200 foot diameter circle.
Right.
Yeah. Right. You can do it that way, but it's still.
They're close enough for the math.
Yeah. It's 6
pi r squared.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not a mathematician, so don't worry about
right.
that, okay? So.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Does anybody have any other discussion? I did pull up the previous amendment just to compare side to side. They are very, very similar. The changes was 2 foot in height on the trees. The part where the any application of manure, surface, or injection shall maintain a 100-foot buffer from any tile or waters of the state, and it shall be up to the owner of the facility that the farmer abides by these stipulations. Otherwise, it was fairly similar from what I can tell. Is there any other discussion? I'll just for the record, you said there can be a motion within the motion. So I'd like to ask for a motion to make sure that all of the information that we have received is put on file.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Gary, second by Dave. I'd ask everybody to please vote on that.
Dave got it.
Okay. 5 in favor.
Oops.
6 in favor with Teeman abstaining.
Thank you.
I did not forget.
Well, that's all right. I got it written twice on each page.
write it every time I do something else and forget. No. With that, we have a motion to approve with the following conditions. There shall be 3 rows of trees on each side of the facility running the span of the buildings, length and width, plus an additional minimum of 10 feet and connecting. excluding driveway, waterway, field access. And plant, they will be planted at a minimum of 2 feet in height with a variety of evergreen species, and at least one row of western red cedar trees must be maintained over the life of the facility.
Sorry about that.
I'm trying.
That's all right.
The trees must be replaced. If the trees must be replaced, it must be done in 1 year and at similar size. Trees must be planted before the livestock enter the facility. There should be a minimum of 3 groundwater wells. I believe that should be water monitoring wells, correct?
Yeah, okay.
The facility shall maintain the state's requirement of 180 days of holding pre-winter. All manure shall be injected in the ground unless there is an emergency situation. In that instance, surface application will be acceptable. However, if surface application is within a half mile of a dwelling or business or school, the applicant will be required to furnish a written good neighbor agreement. Any application of manure, surface, or injected shall maintain a 100-foot buffer from any tile or waters of the state. It shall be up to the owner of the facility to make sure that the farmer abides by those stipulations. The applicant shall utilize an incinerator to manage mortality and shall acquire all necessary permits, i.e. air quality, and have it approved by the state before construction can begin. As for secondary mortality management practices for emergency purposes, dead pile for rendering shall not be visible from the road. And if composting is used, the area in which they are composted must have a concrete floor and sides. The applicant shall not apply for a National Pollution Discharge System permit at any time in regards to discharge livestock waste. Does anybody have any other discussion? With that, I think we will vote on the resolution on special use permit 2023-4 for the placement of a swine feeding operation to be located on the tract of land located on part of the southwest quarter of the northwest quarter, section 25, Island Grove Township.
Resolution
23-4.
No, our resolution.
Our
is
resolution.
23-23. The special use.
Okay.
Got the dash four.
As Don stated.
Coincidence.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay. With that, I ask everybody to vote. There is 3 in favor with Jurgens, Schuler, and Swavely voting yes. 3 opposed, Haxby, Dorn, and Lytle, with Tiemann abstaining. Motion fails. Is there any other discussion? I believe Schuler said he'd like to make a statement.
This has been a tough decision, and I hope you stay and listen to me. But it's my job as a county supervisor to make my decisions with consideration for all aspects of any issue. I strive to leave my motions out of my decisions for the county. It is a fine line to walk and be fair and just and reasonable for all involved. I believe individuals have property rights to do with as they choose, provided it doesn't create a public health and safety issue. There are many opinions on what this is. I consider all the people of Island Grove Township and Liberty my friends. I care about everyone in this county. Therefore, I do not take my decisions lightly. I listened to the people's concerns and pondered my own. I have communicated with 3 engineers in this process to get answers. Summit Pork's design engineer, Nicholas Rowe of Pro Ag Engineering, Patrick Ducey of NDEE, who reviewed the design and approved the permit for the state, and Jamie Super, Natural Resources Conservation Service lead engineer for confined animal feeding operations. I ask about the injection process and application of the waste to the fields and the benefits of trees around the operations. I express my concern for water quality for surface and water ground and groundwater. I was assured by NDEE and Pro Ag engineers the risk of concrete cracking, causing effluent to leak into the groundwater, to be very, very low. Both explained the sediment in the effluent has sealing quality, so it is, if it does crack, it will not have a continuous leak. I ask about perforated tile and sand installation under the pit floor to pick up effluent escaping, which would encourage it to flow to perforated tile around the outside of the pit floor, which Summit Pork voluntarily, at their own design, installs and will be installing on this project. I felt this would detect a leak sooner. Both engineers explained to me doing this could adversely affect the integrity of the floor. It is best to leave the tile and sand out. Any leaking effluent would find its way to the tile without it before percolating into the groundwater. I consulted Mr. Supier, NRCS engineer, as an outsider to this project with the same questions. He supported what I was told by the others. Because this tile is perforated, it's around at the concrete pit floor level. I asked the NRCS engineer if he knew of Pro Ag engineer and their reputation. He does and said they have an outstanding reputation. They have designed hundreds of these facilities. He assured me they would not jeopardize their reputation and engineering license for any project for anybody. All engineers did a great job in verifying their thoughts, as I had many questions. I wish everyone with concerns in this project could have heard the information from the engineers themselves. I requested Mr. Ducey, NDEE engineer, attend a P&Z meeting or one that I would put on myself to answer questions for the public. He was willing to do so, but unfortunately, scheduling conflicts would not allow it timely. In order to vote no on this project, I needed a reason I could defend in court. Based on the research and information gained, I cannot find that reason. And I worked on that reason until last night, even though I did write this earlier, that was not a clinched vote. I was still considering it last night. I had questions I wanted answered here today. The information I received this past week still left me with questions. Summit Pork and Partners are required by county and NDEE regulations to operate and manage in a safe manner for the people and the environment surrounding it. As I said, I do not take this lightly. I said it earlier, if this is next to me, I probably would have to vote the same way, because I treat myself and others the same, no matter what. I got to leave the emotions out of it, follow the county regulations. And the engineers, I know this brings my background with the NRCS and having done construction inspection myself on animal waste lagoons. I have not done construction inspection on concrete structures. There was one that was built north of the 14-mile corner when I was working for NRCS, but the engineer that designed it inspected that himself. And with NRCS, the construction inspector is there every day. I ask the engineers that designed this if they plan to be there on a regular basis, and they will be. For me, that provides some comfort. They're there to be sure this is built as they designed it, the concrete meets the specifications, whatever rebar is put in it, that it's put in for specifications. They take pictures as a matter of record, because as I was there as an inspector, whether it was for animal waste lagoons or if it was for a dam, we keep a written record every day to what happens, the weather, the temperature. It's great detail. It's a diary of the project. So if something does fail, they have something to go back to that they documented. This is how this was done. Many contractors don't like an inspector on the job, but I always felt that it was protection for that contractor. They're shooting themselves in the foot if they don't like an inspector on the job, because it protects them in the event of a lawsuit in the future. There's records. And I know that there's facilities in this state that have high nitrates, and through my experience, there had to be, I don't know what the construction inspections were, something's wrong, how if they cut corners, something's happened that shouldn't have happened in those things. So I, as a former employee of NRCS, and this hasn't been in my job, I have a better comfort level than probably most anybody else here, because I've worked with the engineers, the designees, and I know how fussy they are and how particular they are, and I have an understanding of the science that goes into it. So I hope you will consider my position and your thoughts in the future on this. And I'm the one that has to live with my decision, sleep well at night, and respect myself for the decisions that I've made and be able to defend myself. And I feel that I can do that. Thank you. I want to thank everybody that's contacted me, that's reached out to me. And I am still available to talk about this. And even though it's history now, but it has failed. And so be it.
Thank you. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to say about their vote? Terry probably would have, but he ran out. With that, I'm going to probably pass this back over to Eric to close up the meeting. No.
Anything else from the board for the good of the order?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Dorn. Second by Haxby.
Time, Dorn.
To adjourn at 11:10 on the clock. I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Thank everyone for their patience through the process and being respectful to each other. It's really tough at times. But with that, I would ask for your vote to adjourn at 11:10. Six in favor, five in favor with Lytle and Haxby. Lights are flashing. Six in favor, we are adjourned.